Education is one of the primary responsibilities of state government. So the DFL governor and his IR challenger were invited to appear 2 weeks ago before the state's largest teachers union, the Minnesota Education Association. Each candidate gave a speech, and each candidate answered questions from the teachers in the audience. Speaking first was independent Republican candidate John Grunseth.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased to be with you today. There aren't many people in this room. In fact, there probably aren't many people in this state who thought that you and I would be together again. But here we are. For me, being here is a great honor and a pleasure. And I intend to make the most of it because an opportunity like this, a chance for a candidate to offer an agenda, to listen and learn, and to challenge the very people who make a difference, is the essence of campaigns. People ask me if it's frustrating taking on an incumbent governor. Not at all. Being a challenger is great. So great that no one should get to do it twice. 4 years from now, I'm giving the opportunity to a Democrat. But right now, and for the next 5 weeks, no one in Minnesota will get greater enjoyment out of what he or she is doing than me. I get to talk about the future, not the past. I get to say what we will be doing, not what we should have done. And I get to talk to leaders like you about what our partnership can accomplish, not where differences have driven us apart. We cannot be divided in purpose, even when we may disagree on tactics. We cannot focus only on what has been done when there is so much left to do. It is not enough to take satisfaction in the 90% of Minnesota students who graduate from high school. We must be challenged by the 10% who do not. It is not enough to applaud the educational opportunities we have created for K through 12 students in Minnesota. We must be challenged by the recognition that tomorrow's jobs will increasingly require post-secondary education, and it's up to us to assure that every student who has the desire and the ability will have the means to continue education after high school. And it is not enough for those of us who are charged by the public to deliver quality education, you as teachers, me as a policymaker, to say, trust me. We must be challenged by parents and students who rightfully demand accountability from us. Education cannot, should not, be done on the cheap. Reform and progress require investment. You and I know that the cost of limiting classroom size would be returned many times over. My agenda calls for a limit on elementary classroom size of no more than 17 students. Yet who among you believes that the state's current leadership is willing to put itself on the line for such a program at the estimated cost of $70 million? Money isn't the answer to everything we want to do in education, but there is the plain, hard truth that much of what we want to accomplish will take resources. And the problem is we don't have new dollars. Minnesota is facing a revenue shortfall of $1 billion. And I will tell you, and everyone else, that as governor, I will not make up the shortfall by raising taxes. We in Minnesota already pay 17% more in taxes than the average American citizen. But I will also tell you this. I will not shortchange education. We can accomplish our goals by setting our priorities straight. Sometimes we will find new dollars for education. Many more times we will be faced with realigning current dollars. The things we want to accomplish in education demand leadership, courage, and a political constituency. And they demand that we, you as educators, me as a policymaker, put ourselves at risk. That we be accountable to the citizens of Minnesota as wise stewards of their tax dollars. Accountability starts with measurement. And as imperfect as measurement in our fields, education and government may be, they are all we have. So I say this to you. If you join with me in a partnership, then I will give you the criteria by which you should measure me in 4 years. First, as I have already mentioned, elementary classroom size should be limited to no more than 17 students. Second, I will create a blue ribbon committee, and with your guidance and I hope participation, to conduct a thorough review of state rules and regulations. The committee's findings will form the basis for my efforts to eliminate the bureaucracy that impedes rather than contributes to education. Third, basic educational operating expenses and programs mandated by the state should be paid for by the state. We will retain a school district's option to raise additional funds for education at the local level, but Minnesota will set an example for the nation. The quality of a child's education will not be dependent on the property value of a child's residence. Fourth, education in a Grunseth administration will be a priority, and that priority will be reflected in the state budget. State funding for education has eroded in the current administration. Where once about a third of the state budget was earmarked for education, now only about a quarter, as you know, is spent on schools. You too must become accountable to our constituency, not because of what we will lose if you don't, but because of what we stand to gain when you do. Accountability begins with the testing of those who wish to represent you and your profession. An objective evaluation of teachers is essential to education, as licensing is to medicine. Some people have suggested that it is not good politics to talk to the MEA about the need for teacher testing. Well, they are wrong. You, more than anyone else, know the harm and damage that can be done to children by poorly trained and poorly prepared teachers. Although few in number, you know these teachers exist. I know they exist, and the public knows they exist. It is time that we speak freely and candidly to one another about this unfortunate fact. Every profession challenges and rechallenges itself to do better, to improve, and to change. Teachers are no different than any other profession in that regard. I do believe that for teacher testing to be effective, to be meaningful, it should be structured as peer review. It is you who are best able to create, design, and administer teacher competency testing so that we might ensure continued public support and confidence as we return education funding to our number one priority. More of the same won't work. I want to return education funding to the number one priority for state government, and I want to ensure that the public supports our effort. Accountability for what you and I accomplished together must in the 1990s be measured by another yardstick, performance-based testing of students. We have never been able to justify passing students who can't read and can't write from grade to grade. We have to ensure that all children who graduate from schools have mastered essential skills necessary to be productive citizens in a new world. Periodic testing of students to identify those who need additional help and assistance reaches out to those who otherwise will be left behind. It says that our schools will insist on excellence and will provide the means to achieve it. You and I must earn parents' support for this notion. Parents understand that if their children can't read, can't write, and can't do simple mathematical calculations, they cannot support themselves. Our job is not to graduate them, but to educate them. Finally, as I mentioned earlier, there's another component to these reforms: money. I have challenged you today to join me in making long overdue changes to our education system. Now let me tell you how I intend to return education funding to a top priority in the Grunseth administration. Let's begin with the basic foundation aid formula. Many districts received foundation aid formula increases that were less than the rate of inflation during the last few years. Education funding needs to be maintained at least the level of inflation. This will be a priority in my administration. I will say this today to the MEA, in January in my State of the State address, and next spring to the legislature. I will not be part of a whispering campaign against teachers. I will not be like those who publicly proclaim support for education while privately bemoaning the fact that teachers make too much money. They don't. You have my support for competitive pay and for ensuring all schools receive increased foundation aid at least the levels of inflation. A second key ingredient of my education funding program will be a return to adequate levels of training and experience aid that supplement foundation aid. Teachers who have training and seniority beyond state averages earn more money, as they should. Schools that have concentrations of highly trained and experienced teachers need additional assistance. During the mid-1980s, when Republicans controlled the House of Representatives, the training and experience formula was funded at approximately $100 million. The Democratic-controlled legislature has reduced funding for that program to $10 million. I believe in the excellence of education, and I believe that excellence in education must adequately be financed. I will work to ensure that training and experience formulas are returned to their former levels of support. Finally, as I noted, I will reemphasize education funding as the number one priority in the state budget. This is a Minnesota tradition. This is a Republican tradition, which I wholeheartedly support and endorse. Education is changing. Our schools today are far different from when I graduated from Minneapolis West in 1963. The education my 16-year-old daughter receives at Stillwater Public Schools is far different than what my one-year-old daughter, Mary Ann, will enjoy when it is her turn. Education is changing because the world we live in demands it. As a nation, 28% of our students do not graduate from high school. While more than 90% of Minnesota students graduate from high school, Dr. Lester Thoreau, Dean of MIT's Sloan School of Management, has noted our graduation rate should be high because we don't require anything to graduate. The standards for graduation are much tougher in nearly all of the industrialized world. Thoreau has also noted that in the 1950s, the American workforce was the best educated in the world. The rest of the world copied our education system, but upped the intensity level. Now they produce a superior product. Our school year, roughly 180 days, and not all of those are student contact days, used to be the longest. Now it is the shortest in the industrial world. We cannot afford to stand still. We cannot afford more of the same, and we cannot afford to ignore what the rest of the world is doing, particularly because we are now going to have to compete in world markets. We must do more. My challenge to you today is to demand accountability of your peers through teacher testing, of your work and our system through student testing, and of people like me who seek to bring our ideas and promises to government. The next few years will be challenging ones. There will be many times, I hope, when we will march shoulder to shoulder working for the future of our children. There will be other times when we will agree to disagree, and those times may cause stress and strain in our relationship, but my door will always be open to you. As I stand before you to be considered for your endorsement, let me conclude by saying this. My vision of the future of education in this state is important to me. I will not change my beliefs or redirect my vision to appease those who do not believe in my vision. I stand here today and I say this to you. If you want a government or governor who will re-empower teachers to teach, then endorse me as governor. If you want a governor who will hold schools accountable for results and not just following rules, then endorse me for governor. If you want a governor who will limit classroom sizes to 17 students, then endorse me. If you want a governor who will reform education funding, then endorse me. If you want a governor who will require teachers to evaluate those in their profession and who will promote incentive pay for those teachers who excel, then endorse me as governor. On the other hand, if you do not seek a new vision for our state, if you do not seek added responsibility, if you do not seek education funding reform, if you do not wish to hold your profession accountable, then do not endorse me. If you want a governor who will be strongly committed to working with teachers to revitalize Minnesota's fine education system, then I ask for your support. Thank you very much.
That was the independent Republican candidate for governor of Minnesota, John Grunseth, speaking to the endorsing convention of the Minnesota Education Association. John Grunseth then answered several questions from the teachers in the audience, which I will narrate for you now. First, John Grunseth was asked if he thinks administrative expenses can be reduced in the schools, if there's too much bureaucracy, and if he has some ideas from the private sector that might be helpful.
I very definitely see administrative costs as being too high, and that may be a reflection of the fact that I come out of the private sector. I might just give you an example of what we experienced at Ecolab. Back in 1983, we found we were becoming less and less competitive in a worldwide environment, and we have to be the low-cost producer. In other words, we have to be able to produce a product at a very low cost in order to be competitive on a worldwide basis. So we took a very hard look at our administrative expenses and decided they were way, way, way out of line. And we went through some very drastic reductions. At that time, we had about 4,000 employees and about $400 million in sales. Today, we have about $1.4 billion in sales and about 15,000 employees. We looked at those administrative expenses again this spring, and they were lower than they were in 1983. In my view, our obligation is to put the money behind the teachers and the classroom experience. You are the salesmen and the saleswomen of the educational world, and that's where the dollars belong. I believe that we need a very thorough and full-blown reexamination of what we call general and administrative expenses in the educational world to ensure that we're adequately forcing those dollars into the classroom. I do not believe we are now. I believe that a substantially larger percentage than necessary is going into administration.
Next, John Grunseth was asked his views on merit pay and teacher testing. He was also asked how teachers who work with disadvantaged or learning disabled students would be evaluated if teacher evaluation is based on student achievement.
First, I do not support merit pay. I do support incentive pay. Merit pay is subjective, as you know, and I think it's impossible to administer. But what I'd like to see us do as a society is say to every school district in the state, and administrators are included in this, that if you move the test scores in your district from A to B, there'll be a bonus of X. If you move them from A to G, there'll be a bonus of XX. But incentive-driven and outcome-based, and that's the general direction that I'd like to go in. As to those of you who are working with students in the special education area or those that are disadvantaged, I'm terribly sensitive to that issue. I was a severe dyslexic as a child and had some extreme difficulties. So that's an area that I'm very sensitive to vis-a-vis its protection. And obviously, different forms of measurement are going to have to be used in that particular area where you're working with those that are disadvantaged.
Candidate John Grunseth was asked where he would find the money in the state budget to pay for education, and if he'd take money from other health and human service programs for youth to pay for education. He was asked if he'd propose an increase in all programs affecting the welfare of children.
What we need to do is look very hard at absolutely every dollar that is currently being utilized in education and go through a very thorough restructuring to make sure that those dollars are being appropriately utilized. As I think most of you know, the average school district in Minnesota today now controls only about 11% of its funding. What I mean by that is that you have mandates, rules, regulations, unfunded mandates, a wide variety of criteria that you're subjected to and that you must follow. I think that we need to lift that burden off of teachers, parents, and administrators and re-empower them to look at how they utilize their local or their own budget to attain certain goals. What are those goals? Those goals are graduation standards, testing in the sixth grade, testing in the 10th grade, refocus on the core programs of that nature. Vis-a-vis programs outside of the educational realm that assist or help disadvantaged children, I might note, for example, we have 850,000 kids in the state who are 12 or under. About 100,000 of those kids are at risk. They come from very difficult socioeconomic situations, and only 19,000 of those 100,000 are receiving any form of daycare aid today. I favor actually expanding that aid in that particular area because I think the proper socialization of students before, or kids before they enter the classroom, is extremely important. If they don't have the skills when they enter kindergarten or the first grade to interact socially, they're at an extreme disadvantage from day one.
Gubernatorial candidate John Grunseth speaking at the Minnesota Education Association endorsing convention. In a little bit, we'll hear from incumbent DFL Governor Rudy Perpich. Next question for John Grunseth. Wondering about his position on tuition tax credits or vouchers and also so-called charter schools.
I believe in non-sectarian experimental vouchers, and I believe in experimenting with charter-based schools. Governor Tommy Thompson, Wisconsin, has undertaken this effort in Milwaukee, as I think most of you know, when the black community in Milwaukee became distraught over the quality of education, and they are now experimenting with a non-sectarian voucher there. The Minnesota Citizens League and the Star and Tribune have both called for the experimentation of charter-based schools. I think we ought to give it a try. And I don't think your profession ought to back away from this or be threatened by this or be afraid of this by any means. I think that it very well may open up vast new opportunities for teachers. I think it may even open up opportunities for teachers to establish their own schools, if you will. So it's not something that I think you should necessarily be afraid of or have an adverse reaction to right off the bat.
A teacher at the meeting wanted to know Grunseth's views on teacher retirement programs, saying he had heard that Grunseth was more interested in helping teachers make a career change rather than offering more retirement benefits.
Let me just in general comment on compensation and retirement benefits. I am not one of those that will try and short shrift any profession when it comes to compensation or retirement benefits. I believe, and this is a reflection of my own experience in the private sector, that the way you attract the best people and you keep the best people is you maintain a competitive posture when it comes to compensation and retirement benefits. In other words, I think that we need to be at the 75th or 80th percentile vis-a-vis the rest of the nation. In other words, I very strongly favor a competitive posture in that area.
John Grunseth was asked how he could propose an increase in state funding of education when he also says the state is facing a $1 billion deficit and he doesn't want to raise taxes.
Okay, let's just take a moment and recap the dilemma that we are going to find ourselves in the next biennium when we're looking at about $1 billion revenue shortfall. By the way, this number is a number that most experts now agree upon. The governor's former commissioner of finance, Tom Triplett, who now heads the Minnesota Business Partnership, agrees upon this number. The DFL Senate caucus and the legislature agrees that it's in the $600-700 million range, and that's an old number before we are faced with the prospects of a recession or a downturn in the economy. What you have to remember is that to cover $1 billion revenue shortfall, and remember, we're constitutionally required to balance our budget in this state. We don't have any options. So we either have to do it by holding the line on spending or spending reductions or increasing taxes. But to cover that shortfall would require a $335 tax increase for every Minnesotan. That money just simply does not exist. It isn't out there. We're already the second or third highest tax people in the land. The only thing that separates us from the number one tax people in the country is $37.50, and those are the folks in New York. So it's a number that is very, very difficult to attain. I have proposed about $200 million in various spending increases. Now, it's important to remember that that comes out of a budget for the next biennium that will be in excess of $15 billion. So as a percentage of the budget is a relatively very, very small number. And I am extremely confident that we can find that money through the elimination of expenditures in a variety of different areas. There are a number of programs that we can all think of that need to be revisited, whether it's the World Trade Center, the Department of Economic Development, which in my view doesn't generate much in the way of anything. We spend $40 million a year on it, or Iron World, or whatever the case might be, anything that we're subsidizing. I'm quite confident that we can find the money to cover those increases.
The final question to IR candidate John Grunseth was about his views on student testing. The questioner quoted an educational journal that said 120 million student tests are given every year at a cost of $900 million. And the questioner wondered if Grunseth thought we should be doing even more student testing.
Very much so. I feel very strongly about testing in the 6th and 10th grade. Those are two key points, as you all know, because that allows us to make the mid-course correction before a student goes into junior or senior high. Dwelling on the graduation rate is the absolute last thing we ought to be talking about. We need to make sure that they know something when they graduate. And so graduation standards and testing is really where the emphasis belongs.
Each candidate was given the opportunity to make some short closing remarks, and here now is what John Grunseth had to say at the end of his presentation.
Well, once again, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to be with you. I don't know, we may have a third opportunity. You never know, Bob. But I am delighted to be with you. As I indicated to you the first time we met, I want you to view me as being user-friendly, and I want you to view me as being a good listener. I know we're not going to agree on everything. I think that's fairly apparent. But I think that we are both agreed on one thing. We both want excellence in education. We're both committed to the children of Minnesota. We may have a different roadmap in terms of how we plan to get there, but I think we share that general commitment, and I'm absolutely delighted to have the opportunity to be back again. Thank you very much.
Independent Republican gubernatorial candidate John Grunseth, who spoke 2 weeks ago at the endorsing convention of the Minnesota Education Association. The next speaker is DFL incumbent Governor Rudy Perpich, and we'll hear his speech to the MEA convention next.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. I forgot that I was a dentist until it was just mentioned for a number of years, and I didn't have to be tested all the years I was a dentist, by the way. I want to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you this morning. Today, I want to discuss with you our education record during the past 8 years. A record, and I say our record, because education isn't just the business of the governor or the legislature, teachers or parents. It's our business, and our past and future success is a result of all of us working together. Minnesota, Minnesota's educational system, which I think is the best in the nation, if not, it's fast becoming the best in the nation. I don't know of any other state that's really better. And Minnesota, of course, and our whole system, we're not afraid of change. In fact, we lead the nation in new ideas and new innovations. Our change is a change for the better. What we are doing is working, and we can all be very, very proud of that. Our 91% high school graduation rate, as you're well aware, is the best in the nation. We hope in 1996 to have a 96% completion rate. The President of the United States, President Reagan, even before President Bush, talked about a 90% completion rate by the year 2000. When you compare our completion rate with that of, say, California, which is at 60%, and I think Florida is at 59%. Our 89% postgraduate participation, within 6 years, all the graduates from high schools go on to a post-secondary institution within 6 years, which, again, is one of the best in the country. We're the leader in enrollment options in providing our students and parents with new educational opportunities. President Bush has called it the single most promising idea in education reform. About 20 states now have initiated that program. Our early childhood family education program is a national model. Over 150,000 participated in that program. It has good support in the community. It has good support in the legislature. And of course, we are one of the few states in union, one of the first to fund Head Start, one of the most successful federal programs we have. We rank fourth in the nation on ACT scores, and this year our SAT scores went up 10 points in math and 3 points in verbal skills, while the scores in the rest of the nation declined. We passed the first major school technology bill in the nation, and today we have one computer for every 16 students, and we intend to improve on that considerably in the next 3 and 4 years. Our foreign language enrollment has increased almost threefold in 8 years, and today nearly 38% of Minnesota students take foreign languages. And the number of students taking advanced placement exams has doubled in the last 5 years. And our post-secondary institutions are adapting to the needs of their students, providing programs like child care assistance to needy students and new child care facilities on campus. I believe about 22 or 23 of our technical colleges now have child care facilities. We intend to go back to the legislature in 1991 and make sure within 2 years that each and every one of those technical colleges do have child care facilities. And the list of accomplishments goes on and on. Education is a reason that we are creating 50,000 jobs a year in Minnesota, and education is a reason our workforce is by far the most productive in the nation. I could go on for half an hour just on the number of times or different CEOs of various organizations, CEO of corporations in Minnesota have told me of why they're expanding in Minnesota. It's because of that workforce. And John Akers, who's the CEO of IBM, at a recent meeting told other CEOs he wished he could clone that plant in Rochester, the best plant they have anywhere in the world. And Minnesota is literally the envy of the nation because Minnesota has made education its first, second, and third priority. And I'm proud of our state's education success. I'm proud of our support of you, our teachers, which, of course, you are the backbone of our educational system. And look at our record, the entire record, and you'll see a longstanding commitment to education. At times, we've disagreed. That's only natural. But more often than not, we have worked together to continue to improve the quality of our schools. And education funding is one such example. I know one of the problems we encountered was the initial recommendation that we made in the 1989 legislative session for the 1.6% increase. but you understand the legislative process. It's long and it's fluid. I have a very, very difficult job as governor. I have to also take into consideration those that are less fortunate. When the Head Start program gets dropped, $9 million, I asked for $20 million in that budget. I believe that that's a part of our educational effort. Also, when they drop catastrophic health insurance, the fact that we have 75,000 youngsters that have no coverage at all, again, that has to be taken into consideration. And because of the pressures that occur in society, whatever I recommend in the human service department for human service part of the budget, that's the ceiling. It doesn't go any higher. It comes down from there. And what I recommend for education is the floor, and it comes up from there, because that's how the internal politics of the legislative session works. And the fact is that, and it has happened since I've been governor, that from that January date until May, there's always more revenues coming in than are projected. Those revenues go automatically into education. And secondly, the easiest way, you can have all the hearings, but the way you pump up, what you do with the dollars that you have is you put the budget together in May, goes directly into the formula, and that, of course, is the easiest part as far as the hearings, any hearings that you have to have. We ended up with 3 and 4% funding increases for 91-92 and provided school districts with new levy authority, so overall for the biennium was a 12%. If you look at the record, in 1984, the budget was increased 11%, 85, 6%, 86, 9%, 87, 7.5%, 88, 6.5%, and in 1989, 5%. It took Minnesota 125 years to get to the first billion, K-12. We were a state in 1858 to 1983. We had the first billion-dollar budget, K-12. In the 8 years that I've been governor, we more than doubled that. It's now $2.2 billion. It went from 21% of our budget to 26% of our total budget. The rest of the budget we squeezed and squeezed hard so we'd have more money for education. When I was governor 77-78, I had 55 on staff. Today we have 35. And we have much more work to do because of what's happening on a federal level pushing to the state. We rank 45th or 46th the number of people we employ on a per capita basis. And that again is a part of this process of squeezing as much as possible so we have more money for education. The level of support, K-12, is unmatched in the history of the state and it's or by any other governor in the nation. No one can ever question the value I place on education. I learned early what education means. Education was my passport out of poverty. It was not just for me and my brothers, but it was for literally thousands like me in that period of time. And my parents knew the importance of education, that if we were going to break out of that poverty cycle, it had to be because through a good educational system. They worked hard, we worked hard, and our teachers, of course, were dedicated. They worked with us, and as a result, we were able to do well. When I started school, I couldn't speak a word of English. Some of you may be upset that I did not attend your first endorsement convention, and frankly, I was concerned that the entire record wouldn't be looked at, that only parts of that record would be looked at. I'm here today. I've been your friend. I am your friend, and I'll continue to be your friend because we all share the knowledge that education is the real key that opens the door not only for us and our children, but for the state as well. Quality education creates jobs, and that has always been the heart and soul of this administration and will continue to be the cornerstone of our future. I have stood with you on retirement legislation and help break the logjam for the rule of 90. We need to do more, and we will. At your last convention, you endorsed Arne Carlson. Arne and I share many of the same values when it comes to education. I respect him, and it would have been a positive race, a good race for the people of Minnesota, but Arne is out. The choice for our children and our schools is now very clear. A record, a building, a public education system that is the envy of the nation. And let me close by discussing our priorities. First, I support increased funding for education at all levels. And I hope later on during the question and answer period, I can dwell for a few minutes why I feel that I can do the job to get the funding that's necessary. Second, I will continue to encourage greater parent and community partnership with our teachers to better ensure success. Third, I will actively support early childhood education and other prevention programs to better prepare our children for school. Fourth, I will continue to build on our program of site-based management and real teacher involvement in decision-making at the building and district level. Fifth, we'll push ahead in the use of technology and staff development, important tools for teachers, and we'll also make sure that there's a telephone in every room in every classroom. I was putting together the math and science group, and then I had to, and I was calling people in various professions and the public, and I then had to call teachers. And it was like calling Bangladesh because it was almost impossible to be in contact with them. Sixth, I'll be proposing legislation to deal with our school facilities problem. We went in this legislative session, $20-some million for that program. We have more needs, considerably more needs, well over $200 million. We'll be making our recommendations for the 1991 session. So again, we can take a part of and money that goes for mortar and brick will give you more, give these school districts more room for operating levies. Seventh, I will be preparing legislation to deal with the recommendation of the governor's task force on math, science, international education, and technology. You're well aware of the task force on human resources. Bob Astrup, of course, is on that committee. I've always talked, we want to run state government, same as the private sector. We're getting recognition for the management, but I also believe that we have to deal with people, the public employees, in the same way, and again, that's a little speech, a separate speech. It takes some time, but when people are 48 and 50 years of age in the school because of consolidations or closing or because of dropping enrollments, there has to be a plan in there. And then, of course, you're well aware, when I came back in 83, my support of the rule of 85, I've always supported that. We went for 90 because the 85 wasn't attainable. I believe that 1991, 92, that will be attainable, and I'll be supporting that rule of 85. Our children must leave our schools with the best education in the nation, well prepared to compete against graduates from any other state in the nation. With the incredible changes around the world and the opening of new international markets, we must concentrate now more than ever before on preparing our students for new technologies and foreign cultures and languages. This is a challenge of tomorrow. And working together, we have made Minnesota the national standard of excellence. Working together, we'll make Minnesota education system the best in the world. Thank you very, very much.
Governor Rudy Perpich speaking to the Minnesota Education Association. We heard his IR challenger, John Grunseth, earlier in the hour. Both the candidates answered questions from the teachers in the audience. The first question to Governor Perpich was about merit pay.
Well, I was on the Hibbing Board of Education some years back, and I heard at that time from board members who had been serving on that board for many years the many difficulties that result in that incentive pay within the systems. I believe that we have resolved much of that as it's gone over the years by the steps and, of course, the degrees, be it the master's degree or toward the doctorate degree.
Next, Rudy Perpich was asked about the equalization of school levy referenda and whether he had a plan to correct the imbalance in property valuations around the state.
Okay, we, of course, recommended that to the 1987 legislative session. We intend to do that again in 1991. I think we took a step in that direction in the facilities bill because the communities that have very low property valuations that literally didn't have the dollars for the mortar and brick. You know, we ended up with $20-some million in this session. We intend, as I said earlier, to improve on that in the next legislative sessions. And third, that again, will come 1991, that we have some equalization in those with those school districts that just don't have the the property value, and as a result, have a very difficult time in passing any of the special levies that are requested. So we'll try to build that in the 91 session. But we'd try to do that in 87. Well, we worked through Commissioner Nelson, and, you know, he's there almost full-time with the legislators. So there will be a concerted effort for that legislation.
Governor Perpich was then asked his position on teacher bargaining on educational policy issues, not just money. and what he would do to improve teacher involvement in education policy.
There are some districts, obviously, that are having problems in that area with policy. Again, I feel that that can be worked out. We have asked, you know, the Bureau of Mediation Services. In fact, we just had a kind of a convention or a meeting working between labor and management. I think a lot of that can be worked out without being forced from the state of Minnesota. I still believe that that give and take, that you can work it out. I'm sorry, I know what you'd like. You'd like a change in the law. And
well, the next teacher asserted that Minnesota teacher salaries have dropped in national rankings, that class sizes have increased, programs have been cut, and money is tight. He wanted to know if Governor Perpich would ask the legislature for the amount of money he actually thinks is needed for education, not just take what's left over in the budget negotiations. The questioner also wanted to know if Governor Perpich would raise taxes.
As governor, you have these, not demands, I shouldn't say, but the needs of society. And I have to go into a session knowing the psychology, I guess, and the experience I've had in the legislative process. I would have to go back and, again, check what I've received from the Department of Education differs with what you have. Obviously, as far as inflation, I've been told that we are considerably over inflation over the eight-year period. In the last 2 years, I'd have to take a look at what the inflation is and what the increases were. You might be right for this year. When you have $106 million that is shifted from the feds to the state, the programs are coming, the money's not coming with it, I have to find money in that budget for those programs. We certainly can't allow 65,000 or 70,000 children to be without any coverage at all. I mean, if they need glasses or their teeth need to be taken care of, or they have sore throats, what have you, the parents don't take them to get the necessary care, we have to be responsible for that. Same thing when they dropped catastrophic health insurance. It was $15.5 million that we had to squeeze out our budget for that purpose. So again, I believe that the route that we have to go is to create the jobs, as we have in the past 7.5 years, to get the revenue so that we can do it. If the instructions to our commissioners, and they're in the process right now of putting the budget together for next year, if their instructions are squeeze everywhere so that we have the dollars for education, I don't think you can give better direction or a focus to administration than that, where education is the first, second, and third priority. I'm not, you know, some superhuman that can find money and just say I want X number of dollars to come out of the sky. I work very long hours at my job. I used to be in a canoe twice a week. I've been in a canoe once this year. I used to be on cross-country skis quite often every winter. I haven't been on cross-country skis since I've been governor. I work around the clock because I know my job as governor to make sure that every person that wants a job has a job in Minnesota. That's the way you resolve any problems we have. If the revenue is not there, I don't care who's governor, you're not going to be able to fund the programs. And this is why I work so hard to create the jobs that are necessary, and why I believe with my experience in international trade, we have to develop those international markets. We have saturated as far in the region as far as how much more jobs can be created. The jobs have to be created in expanding in international markets.
Governor Perpich was then asked about vouchers and state support of private schools.
Let me first the where we are in a line that's being blurred, and that is where you have students that have dropped out of school. I'm, you know, in there nationally, I think it's 80% of those that are incarcerated are dropouts. Minnesota, it's about 60-some percent. And I believe that once one drops out, we're looking at future problems that will cost us much, much more. It costs us now in Minnesota $24,000 for every person that's in our correctional facilities. Most of the people that are in human service roles now are dropouts from school. So I believe that a student that has dropped out, and this is happening in Minnesota to a certain extent, no one knows what the reason is. Maybe the family, can be the environment, can be their school friends, could be the teachers, administration, one doesn't know, but they do drop out, and I believe we have to get them back in so that they could have an entry at, say, a non-sectarian, that they can come in back into the system. I support that. But other than that, no, I'm opposed to vouchers.
Governor Rudy Perpich, who was speaking at the Minnesota Education Association endorsing convention, was then asked to explain his views on teacher testing.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier, because I thought of it when I was introduced, I sometimes forget I was a dentist. I've been away from it for a little while. But we don't test dentists, we don't test lawyers, we don't test doctors of medicine. The system is the same for all as you enter. No, I'm opposed to the testing. And let me tell you, when I saw what happened to the steel industry, as an example, when I came back from Europe, I thought to myself, if anyone should be tested, it'd be the CEOs of the steel companies. What happened to that industry? No, seriously, they didn't modernize. The new technologies was obvious what was happening in other parts of the world. I recognized as soon as I moved over to Vienna a couple of years before it really happened. No, we have the refresher courses and like we do in dentistry and the other professions. I think teaching should be on par with the other professions. Don't test the rest. Why should we test the teachers?
And finally, here are Governor Perpich's closing remarks to the Minnesota Education Association meeting.
Well, my whole life, and it goes back when I came back to Hibbing, Minnesota, as a dentist, one of the first things I did, of course, was become a candidate and was elected to the Board of Education. The first comparable worth, I guess, in the nation happened at Hibbing, Minnesota, when I was there. And you could talk to any of those teachers, those people in the staff at Hibbing, who was their best friend on that Board of Education. I became a candidate for the state senate because I didn't agree with the policy in education. That was my whole campaign. And the same is true as governor. I took the oath of office, as you're well aware, at Hibbing High School. Probably the only governor in the United States that ever took an oath of office on the same stage, of the high school. Two speeches that I made, State of the State, again, first time in the history of the state that a State of State was made away from the Capitol. One was at a state university system, 2 years later at a high school. My whole life has been dedicated to education. When I came back in 1983, I said we no longer need strong backs and nimble fingers. Because we can't compete. We can't compete with East Asia. If you've been there, you see how they work and for what wages they work. I said all those jobs are going to leave. It's only brain power that's going to succeed. And I believe the policies of the 8 years have really been successful because of this focus on education. All of our efforts have been on education. As I said earlier, we are now 45th or 46th the number of state employees we have on a per capita basis. And that is because we've squeezed and squeezed to have the dollars for education. Again, I had 55 people on staff when I was governor, 77, 78. Today we have 35. January 1st, I had 37. The cutbacks occurred. We didn't touch K-12. We removed two more people from my own staff. I am an education governor, and I'm recognized both within the state and nationally. And a poll that, I'm the only one that doesn't believe in polls, but let me tell you what the poll said. The people in Minnesota, I always thought that they'd associate me with jobs. What they associate me with is education. Thank you very much.
That was Minnesota Governor Rudy Perpich speaking 2 weeks ago to the endorsing convention of the Minnesota Education Association. By the way, just to remind you, the MEA did indeed give its endorsement to Perpich. His independent Republican challenger, John Grunseth, spoke first, and you heard his speech and the question and answer session with him earlier in the hour. Well, on the topic of education here, many small-town school districts face some very big problems, losing kids through the open enrollment program and post-secondary options or simply through attrition. But some small schools are doing very well. They're offering specialized programs and curricula for their own kids and for students from outside their immediate area, too. For example, in the Red River Valley area, the state's first high school geared specifically toward global studies has opened its doors. Leif Enger of Main Street Radio reports.
The Red Lake Falls High School football squad runs through its drills on a chilly gray afternoon. In the complicated scheme of handoffs and blocks, one guy seems to be getting the football a lot, driving into the line, making yardage, stopping when the defense lays hands on him and the whistle blows. As it turns out, this player is getting so much practice because he is just learning American football. He is 18 years old and Finnish. His name is Vila Vita.
It's hard to pronounce for you guys, but they call me Billy or whatever.
Vita is one of the 47 new kids in Red Lake Falls, here to take classes and trade culture glimpses with real Middle Western Americans and students from 13 other countries. It's been challenging so far, he says. Nothing's been a pushover, not the language courses, not small town life after his city home in Finland, and certainly not football.
It's fun, but it's hard, really, really hard, getting hit. But I like it though. It's kind of fun to try to go through the line. That's really challenging.
The presence of Vila Vita, 46 other foreign students, and 3 foreign teachers has changed a lot in this Red River Valley High School of 300 students. You see every color in the hallways and hear snippets of a dozen languages. Just a year ago, this was simply the Red Lake Falls High School, a district in debt and dreading the impact of open enrollment. Now it's the Global Studies Institute, with a dorm full of kids from all over and a courtyard of flags like a small United Nations. Superintendent Russ Sethry.
One of the things we looked at was the state agenda in education. And we saw that the one area that the state, and in particular Governor Rudy Perpich, has had on his agenda for some time but had not really been addressed was the area of global studies. The lights went on. Global studies, international students, we have a place for them here in Red Lake Falls.
The prod behind the plan, Sethry says, was not purely educational idealism, but also a realistic vision of where this small district was heading. Thief River Falls and Crookston are close by to the north and west with their larger districts and post-secondary schools. Principal Bob Bester says the school needed to do something noteworthy to keep its own kids and attract others.
We thought if we could make this a singular situation and make us the magnet school for global studies in northwestern Minnesota, we then would have a reason for being and our own identity and could possibly attract students through open enrollment and even bring the college students in from each side of us, because each of them is limited language-wise. And that was part of our planning and part of our justification and part of our dream.
The dream, as Bester and Sethry planned it, went like this. They would get hold of the city's vacant hospital building, renovate it into housing, devise a curriculum centering on world languages and cultures, and bring in as wide a field of foreign students as they could. The process has gone quickly, in part because the city was willing to help, selling the building to the district for a dollar, providing a $50,000 grant and a $100,000 loan. Just a year later, the dream appears to be on track.
As a young person growing up, you have to find ways of meeting people who are very different from yourself and kind of feel those out. I mean, is it true that not all black people are exactly alike? You don't really know that for sure until you meet people and test those things out.
Ruth Ann Olson is a Twin Cities education consultant whose focus is multicultural education. She says there is an unprecedented push now toward, quote, celebrating diversity in schools, but says not every such program works as it should.
On the one hand, I think celebration is important. On the other hand, celebration in and of itself, if it doesn't go beyond that, pretends that it's very easy and it's very exciting. And frankly, the issues of diversity are issues that require a lot of very hard work.
But Red Lake Falls administrators say they're ready for hard work, work that will go beyond a skimmed textbook approach. The curriculum is designed to take students through 4 full years of foreign studies. The heavy emphasis is on languages. Students can major in Spanish, German, French, or Russian. By graduation, Bester says, students in the program will be bi- or trilingual. They'll have a good general knowledge of the arts, sciences, and world geography. Many will have spent summers abroad. The foreign students, he says, provide cross-cultural friendships. The foreign teachers, living, speaking examples.
Above all, it broadens the mind, you know.
Mauricio Navadelgado, just recently arrived in Red Lake Falls from his home in Mexico City, says his job is a little like a mission to him. He teaches Spanish, but also knows French and studies German in his off hours. He says what he tries to get across to all of his students is that knowing other languages and cultures has never been as important as it is today.
All the world has a mutual interaction, you know? Something that happens right now in the Persian Gulf is affecting us to us right now. So you see, it's very important to get right communication, to have a common point of view, and probably if we can get to understand each other, that would be much better.
Red Lake Falls Spanish teacher Mauricio Navadelgado. With John Bewin, this is Leif Engert.